Okay, welcome to the class on healthy student-teacher relations. The description said, what do healthy student-teacher relations look like? Are you as a teacher the student's buddy, mentor, or dictator? And I'd like to, my takeaway for today, the main point is that healthy relationships are built with time and love. The key word there is built. Healthy relationships are built. They don't just happen, it takes work. They're built over time. So soon after I met the beautiful girl who is now my wife, I called her dad and asked for permission to begin a relationship with her. Actually, I asked for permission to ask her if I could begin a relationship. She had to be open to it as well. If she would have been, then it would have been a problem. And as you enter your classroom, your students will be very open to a relationship with you. Now, you're not dating them, no, but there is a relationship that takes place there. And when you start off, you have a clean slate. There's my beautiful wife right there. You have a clean slate. But if you hurt a student, or if you destroy their trust in you, then it's almost impossible to gain that back and have a good relationship with them. I'm not saying you can't. I'm sure you can. Good relationships take weeks and sometimes even years to build, but they can be destroyed in a single day. And in building good relationships, you take the stairs up, but you take the elevator down. It's a lot easier to build to destroy them, a lot easier than it is to build them. Anyway, we started dating and recording, and it was very exciting. I really looked forward to those weekends that we spent together. But over time, the newness and the excitement kind of wears off. You know, dating is actually a lot of work. It was a lot of traveling. I drove over 9 hours to see her and then 9 hours back home. There's letters to write, phone calls to make, making decisions about how often to see each other and how fast to go, you know, not too fast, and how often to meet. Now, if I wouldn't have loved her, I probably wouldn't have lasted more than 3 or 4 months. But because I loved her, it was like Jacob in Genesis 29:20. It says, and Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and it seemed to him but a few days for the love that he had for her. And that is what I mean by the takeaway. Healthy relationships are built with time and love. If there's not love there, if you don't love your students, then you probably aren't going to be willing to invest the work and time you need to invest in them to build it, to have a good relationship with them. What is the greatest command? Matthew 22:34-40, Jesus, or this story, it says, but when the Pharisees had heard that he put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him the question, tempting him and saying, Master, what is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Now Jesus said this is the most important thing. And when Jesus says something like that, I think we need to pay attention. If we could only follow this, think of all the problems that would be solved if we would just simply love God and love our neighbor. Think of all the church problems that would take care of if we would just love God and love our neighbor. Now, who is your neighbor? You know, when Jesus was asked that question, he was an excellent teacher. He didn't just give the answer. He told a story, and he told the story of the Good Samaritan. So remember that when your students ask you questions, don't just give them the answer. Make them figure it out. But in your classroom this year, who will be your neighbor? Your students. That's right. That's exactly right. So love God and love your students. I can't emphasize this enough. Mothers are an excellent example of showing love to their children. You know, when babies are born, they're actually pretty ugly. Some of you might disagree with me on that. I think very few babies are cute. Maybe after a couple years. But the mother just loves them and thinks they're so beautiful. And babies are actually very selfish as well. They All they can think about is me, me, me. Feed me. Change my diaper. Feed me. Hold me. Feed me. Rock me. Feed me. And they cry and scream if they don't get it soon enough. And they don't care if it's the middle of the day or the middle of the night. They want it. They want it now. But the mother just holds them close and murmurs about how sweet they are. But don't take me wrong. I love babies too. But do we love our students like that? Now I want to talk about some of the wrong kinds of relationships. And I just took the three that were in the description. I didn't come up with this description. I guess I think I forgot to come up with one, and then the board just came up with one for me. So thank you, Connor, for doing that for me. Anyway, but what is the wrong kind of relationship? So first of all, we're going to look at the buddy. I think of a relationship that's high on love and low on discipline. Maybe you've heard about the three types of parents. There's the, you know, high love, low discipline, and then high discipline, low love, and then high love and high discipline, or low love and low discipline. But anyway, the buddy type of relationship is high on love and low on discipline. And I picture that as a teacher. This is a good teacher. Teacher that is good with relationships. And this type of relationship usually works really well for the first couple of weeks. But eventually, the students are going to do something that is you're going to have to deal with. And then you have to choose. You know, it might be misbehavior in class. It might be poor sportsmanship on the softball diamond. It might be a failing grade. Something is going to happen eventually. And you're going to have to deal with it. You're going to have to choose. Are you going to deal with it, or are you just going to let it slide? Because after all, you're friends, right? See, friends do favors for friends. And this is one of the things I address in my pitfalls class. If you come to that, you'll hear it again. But they say, you know, can we have extra recess? Can we play for story? We finished all our work. Can we go outside and play? Can we skip math class today? Well, if you're a friend, then of course the answers to all those questions is yes, yes, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Well, then one day, you know, maybe you think, or the school board comes and talks to you, say, hey, heard y'all were skipping math class for something else. And so, we've got to tighten up. And so one day, and the next time they asked if we can do the skip math class, and you tell them no. And then they get upset at you, maybe because, well, they thought you were their friend. Friends don't give grades to each other. They don't admonish each other. I think Jonathan Erb said that the other night as well. They don't tell their friends what to do. They don't make you work hard and then grade your effort. They don't discipline you. That's the teacher's job. So be the teacher. Be an example for them. And the students actually want you to be a teacher. They want you to be the teacher. And they want you to take care of the problems that come up. When I was teaching, I had actually taught, there was four siblings from one family who I had in my class, and two brothers and two girls. Anyway, the younger boy was a handful. He was a very high-maintenance student. In your classrooms, you'll probably have, they say, about 20% of your students take about 80% of your time, and then the other 80% only take about 20% of your time. This is one of the ones that took a little more time. Anyway, he was acting up in class or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. And I tried to deal with it the best I could. And then later I found out from the father that the older brother mentioned something. He just told his dad he just really appreciates that Derek just took care of that and didn't allow him to keep on. Now, I didn't always do that. But the students, they want you to take care of that problem. Maybe there's one student that's just goofing off. And, you know, you may not think about the four that are behaving well, but they are thinking, just take care of it, deal with it, you know. And maybe we're just thinking about that one and we don't want to hurt their feelings or something. I wasn't pointing at you. Don't join in the debate about which kind of truck is best, then there's no one to end the argument. Once they grow up, they'll, of course, realize that Fords are the best. You know, we fool ourselves into thinking that if we just let the students do what they want, that they will like us. Now, think back to your teenage years. Did your parents always just let you do whatever you wanted? No, of course not. Did you like your parents? Well, maybe not all the time, but now, looking back, you probably liked them and glad they did what they did. I hope so, anyway. So it's okay to want to be liked, and that's fine. We all, especially first-year teachers, would go into school, I think, and would want to be liked. And I think even 10th-year teachers go in, and you want the students to like you. You want it to be a good year. But don't let that desire dictate the decisions you make. Don't choose that just based on that. It's okay to want to be liked, but not at the expense of doing the right thing. So as a teacher, you'll have to choose between doing the right thing and doing what you know the students would like for you to do. And sometimes that's difficult to know. You know, what is the right thing? How much can you let them do what they want or help make decisions on things? It can be very difficult. But if you're just focused on what the students want, then you're probably not going to make the right choice. Focus on what is best for them, what you know will work. In the first days of school, Harry Wong says, "Be friendly, caring, loving, and sensitive, but do not be their friend. They have enough on their hands with their own friends." So, and I think it was Jonathan Miller, perhaps, that said, to be an adult friend. You know, be an adult friend, not a peer friend. So there's two types of friendships. You can be an adult friend or be a peer friend. And it's a fine line. I'm not sure exactly where that line is. Maybe if you have thoughts on that, I'd like to hear them later in the class. But be their adult friend, not their peer friend. Don't put yourself down on the same level as they are. You have to maintain that respect in that relationship with them. The second type of teacher is the mentor / counselor. And this is someone who is a very good listener. They can empathize with others, and it's the type of person who just kind of draws people in, and they just want to talk to them and want to tell them their problems. This teacher is probably also very good with relationships. And this is, I would be loved to hear your feedback on this. You know, what should a teacher do when a student comes to you with a situation that's not related to school? This is at home or somewhere else, and the student is just pours out your heart to you as a teacher. What should you do in a situation like that? How many of y'all have taught for 3 years or more? Raise your hand. Okay, not very many. Okay, so what would you do? Janelin? Okay. Sorry, I put you on the spot. You didn't listen? Okay. That's a very good answer. It's never wrong to listen. You know, and that probably as a teacher, if one of your students would come to you with a situation or want to talk with you about something, it kind of makes you feel good. You know this student trusts you. You know you have a good relationship with this student. And it makes you feel like they're looking up to you. They want your advice, perhaps. And that makes us feel good. But let's be careful. Let's be very careful. In 2 Samuel 15, 1 through 6, I want to read this story. It says, "It came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man had a controversy came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, 'Of what city art thou?' And he said, 'Thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel.' And Absalom said unto him, 'See, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man disputed of the king to hear thee.' Absalom said moreover, 'Oh, that I were made a judge in the land, that every man which hath a suit or cause might come to me, that I would do him justice.' And it was so that when every man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel." And I think this was mentioned already too about stealing their hearts. Be very careful that you do not steal their hearts, the heart of the students. And Absalom did that by simply listening to them, which there's nothing wrong with that. But then he cast doubt on the authority at that time. King David was the authority. He was the leader. And you could say, you know, the student has parents. The parents are the student's, the child's authority. They're the first of all, a child is responsible to his father. And Absalom said, "Oh, the king, yeah, He doesn't have anyone to do this, to take care of this for you. If I was king, then I would fix the problem. This is what I would do. And he stole their hearts by undermining the authority at that time. You know, maybe a student comes to you and shares some of their struggles with you. Maybe something happened at home, and maybe the student wasn't treated fairly. The Absalom response would be to listen carefully and then sympathize with them and say how you would have handled the situation differently. But if you're undermining the authority of the father in the home, then that is stealing their hearts, and you don't want to do that. Not unless you're planning on taking the child in and adopting them and keeping them until they're 21 or however old. If you don't want to do that, please don't steal their hearts, and I don't think you should anyway. So what should you do? And back to that question, Janelin said, we need to listen. And that is very right. We do need to listen when they want to talk to us. And perhaps, you know, they might have a concern about school, about maybe something that happened at playground. And maybe they didn't think they were treated fairly, or we need to listen to them. If they have something at home, let's listen to them. And if there's a situation where there is abuse, we need to let the school board know. We don't just do nothing about that. But ask yourself the question, am I the right person to help this child? And I asked several people about this because I wasn't sure how. I never had a student come to me like this and ask with a home situation or whatever that wasn't really in my realm of authority. And so I asked several people about what they should do. And one of the answers that I got was, especially if it's going to be an ongoing situation where they're coming to you multiple times needing advice and counseling, then point them to someone else. You can't, unless you just have lots and lots of extra time, which most teachers don't, you can't be their counselor. Be very careful. Try to point to someone who can help them. You were hired to be the teacher, not their counselor. And again, there may be times where you can help counsel them and give them good advice without it being an ongoing situation. But be very careful that you don't steal their hearts and don't undermine the authority of the family at home. Never try to counsel a student of the opposite gender as yourself. Make sure, guys, if an older girl wants to pour out their heart to you, say, no, I need to have another lady teacher here, or if you have a wife, you can bring her along or something like that. Don't try to counsel, and the same way with the girls. Make sure you don't. That can cause problems. You know, often these hurting children, they have an issue with someone in authority. And like I said already, don't undermine that authority. If you agree with them and tell them this, it should have been handled differently, then they will lose respect for that authority. And now there might be cases where the authority was wrong, but don't, I don't think it's right to tell them that necessarily. It's better to point them to someone else or just encourage them. Try to direct the child back to the parents. Encourage them to go talk with their parents. And point them back to their parents, because if you just take it in and sympathize with them, you will be stealing their hearts. The third type of relationship that could possibly happen between a teacher and a student is the dictator. Now, in my last year of school, my teacher, he was a very good teacher, taught for many years, and he had a pretty rough year that last year. There were some families that moved in, and there was just some extra energetic boys in the fifth grade class, and it was a large class, and boys were pretty unruly, I would say, and the girls probably were too. Anyway, he didn't teach again. So the next year, there was a new teacher that came in and started teaching, and I don't know a lot of details, but it sounded like she pretty much just got run over by these boys. So the next teacher that came in was a man teacher, and he was a very determined man and a very no-nonsense type of guy. Again, I don't know a lot of details about this story. I just know my brother was in the class, probably one of the rowdy boys. But it seems like he was trying to show these boys who was the boss. You know, surely, and he was the type of person you would think, surely he could manage this class. He was a big fellow. He was strong. And I figured, surely the situation would turn around. But it didn't take long. We learned that things were not going well at school. And again, my brother was one of the students. And I found out later that the students were getting three or four detentions a day sometimes, or like multiple students. And sometimes it was maybe 10 detentions given out in a week. And for those of you that aren't familiar with the demerit detention system, you get three demerits, and then once you get three demerits, you got a detention. And if you got a detention, you had to stay after school 30 minutes and mop the floor or do some type of other menial work to help you feel remorse for what you had done wrong. Anyway, and again, I don't know what all happened, but there was multiple detentions given out, and the year did not go well. It did not, the problems were not taken care of, and maybe he was doing the best he could. I don't know. I hate to say he was doing the wrong thing. There's a lot of other factors that could have been involved as well, like parental support and things like that. But the regardless of all that, this man failed to get things back under control. And it could have been because he was operating somewhat like a dictator, trying to punish these students until they respect him, until they behave. And there was one boy in particular who was probably the ringleader of this batch of boys. And it's a really sad part of the story because I think he was expelled from school possibly, maybe came back. But anyway, several years later, this boy is involved in drugs and smoking. He's even ended up in jail for several months. And it was before he was even 18 years old, I think. And I just, how can we, could that have been avoided somehow? I'm not blaming anyone. I'd say it's probably a home problem just as much as a school problem. But somehow we have to figure out a way to help our students and have a type of relationship with them that we can impact them, and they can go out of school and become workers in God's kingdom and not just the inmates of a jail cell. So what are the marks of a good relationship? Again, our takeaway, healthy relationships are built with time and love. And a good relationship is like an investment. The more time and effort you put into it, the more you will get out of it. And also it builds up so that if you do make a mistake, hopefully they will forgive you because you've spent time building up credit with them. Back when we were dating, there was one, I think it was a Wednesday evening perhaps, when we had prayer meeting, and we kind of had this schedule. Or was it Sunday? Wednesday evening. We had a schedule of phone calls where I would call her certain times, so I was scheduled to call her this Wednesday evening, and for some reason, I forgot all about it. And she was sitting outside on the steps waiting for my phone call and waiting, and I think I probably was in bed sleeping already or something and never got a phone call. And the next time we talked, I don't even remember exactly how it happened, but she informed me that I had forgotten, or maybe I remembered. But you know what? She did forgive me I think she forgave me for it. You know, because we had a relationship built up there. I had enough brownie points stored up that even though I went down considerably, the relationship was salvaged because I had credit in the bank there. So if you have a good relationship with a student, treasure that, guard it. It's too easy to lose by doing the wrong thing or saying the wrong thing. So healthy relationships are built with time and love. And love, again, is the most important thing there. Love your student as yourself. Do you enjoy being with children? How many of you enjoy being with children? Okay, that is a requirement for teaching. If you don't enjoy being with children, you're not going to last very long in the classroom. Love is a commitment. You have to choose to love in every situation. It doesn't matter what a child does. A mother will love the child anyway. They might get in the bathroom and unroll the whole roll of toilet paper over the commode. They might go into the laundry room or spill all the flour on the floor, and multiple things like that happen, and mother just loves them anyway. You know, sometimes it's going to be hard to love your students depending on what they do. When I was in kindergarten, we were having story. It's kind of down in the corner of the church house, and I threw up all over the floor. And my poor teacher, he was only 17 years old at the time, he had to clean up that mess. Now, I never had to do that, but I just talked to someone else this morning who said just this past year, one of his students threw up over the class table. and he had to clean that up. Now that takes some love and commitment. So commit to loving your students regardless of what they do. Maybe, you know, maybe it's a student that is just being disrespectful or challenging your authority. Those, it may be kind of hard to love those students, but if you just be committed to love them regardless, just like a mother loves her child, that will make a huge difference. And the interesting thing is, the students that are the hardest to love, they're often the ones that need love the most. The students that are the hardest to love are the ones who usually the ones who need your love the most. Always, always be kind to your students. Especially in our words, and it can be in our actions as well. Praise them when you see good behavior. Notice when they open the door for someone. Notice when they take it out in the game without fussing. Notice when they take time to help a younger student tie their shoes. And compliment them for that. Maybe it wouldn't have to be right there, but maybe later you could compliment them. And it's good to compliment or praise them in front of the other students as well.
Sorry about the bell. Ignore that.
Okay, I was getting concerned. So, notice when they do things like that and compliment them for it. Because there will be times they'll do bad things that you have to rebuke them for. But if you've already been complimenting them for the good things they're doing, that bank of trust that's built up is going to help you when you go to them with something that they need to improve on. And it should always be more praise than criticism that you're giving to them. Treat them as you would want to be treated. Think about when you were in school. Do you remember how your teacher handled situations and what they did when you did something bad? How did they handle it? The next point is never shame a student in front of his peers. And I had a fourth grade girl once who really struggled in math, and I kind of had the practice when somebody was really struggling with something that I would, especially if it was a math problem, I would call them up to the whiteboard and explain the problem to them, and then they could work it out on the board, and just made it a lot easier to work with them than we had these desks all the way around the room, and it was just a little bit hard to really show them at their desk. So I called them up to the whiteboard and would explain the problem, go over it there, and until they figured it out. And I realized later that this was very embarrassing to this girl, because she felt like I was just singling her out. And even though that it was, the class was facing the wall, no one was really supposed to be looking at her, but I was pulling her out and helping her there, kind of like in front of the class. And it was embarrassing to her, and it made her feel embarrassed or belittled. She was probably embarrassed because she didn't understand that. There would have been a lot better ways for me to handle that. And it wasn't really helping her. Children are very sensitive, especially girls are very sensitive. Try not to single them out. Maybe you remember a time in school when you were singled out, and how did it make you feel? You know, maybe I should have just had, if one in the class is struggling with the math problem, maybe I should just bring them all up to the chalkboard, and they could all do some of these problems, even if they already know how to do them. And that'd be a good way to maybe deal with it instead of singling one out. So love your students. And then the second thing in a good relationship is communication. And we're hearing a lot about this already. Communication with your student is very, very important. Communicate with them about your expectations. Make it clear what the rules and procedures are. And this is why, if you don't have a lot of experience in teaching, keep the rules and procedures short. Even if you do have a bunch, you should. Keep the rules and procedures, not a lot of them, because in order for them to work, you have to be consistent with them. You can't have if you have so many that you can't remember what they are, the students will not remember what they are. And then you expect to punish them when they don't, or call them out when they don't follow the procedure. Just keep them short and simple so you can be consistent with them. And communicate with them when behavior problems arise. And be very specific about what the student did that was not acceptable. Don't just say, "You're not allowed to act like that." Or, "Just stop. Stop doing that." Make sure you say exactly what the student is doing wrong. And don't call out the student. Call out the misbehavior. so that they know you're not angry at them or you're not focused on them. It's just this type of behavior, talking like that in a game, or calling the game a stupid game because you lost, or saying that the teams weren't fair. We don't do that at recess time. Communicate with them, and especially if you do have to call them out or call out their behavior, don't do it in front of everyone else. Mr. Mark, when I was in the upper grades, he taught me in kindergarten, and he also taught me in the upper grades. There was a girl there that I guess I took a liking to when I was in seventh grade, and we were having quite a relationship there in school, which wasn't appropriate. And one day he said, "Hey, Derek, I'd like to talk to you." And so I clearly remember we went through the auditorium and down the stairs and right there by the entrance, away from everyone else. And he had a good talk with me. And he asked me if I have a crush on this girl. And I either through ignorance of the meaning of the word crush, or maybe I was just lying, I said no. But he went ahead and explained to me about girls and how you should act toward them and how you should not act toward them. And it was really good for me. I knew what he was talking about. I knew what I was doing that I shouldn't do. But what meant more to me was that he took the time to explain this to me. He took the time to talk with me, and obviously not in front of everybody else. And that I knew he cared about me, and that was, it just meant a lot to me. So communicate with your students. If they are being disrespectful or something, communicate them about what they're doing that's not right, and make sure it's very clear that how you're dealing with it, so you don't punish them for something that they didn't expect you to punish them for. Take an interest in their lives. The last year that I taught in Tennessee, I had 15 students in grades, with grades 4 through 8, and also one high schooler who, the high schooler happened to be my younger brother, so that was interesting. But we had 3 teachers the previous year, and then because of the school getting a little bit smaller, and I was an experienced teacher by then, so I thought I'd taught 3 years, so I thought, this, I'm experienced now, I can handle a little bit more. And so, the younger grade teacher had grades 1 through 3, and I had 4 through 8 with a high schooler. And it seemed to be going well. The year seemed to go very well. But towards the end of the year, some problems began to arise. And I tried to deal with them, but what I was doing was not working. And I realized too late that I wasn't, because I was so busy helping all the students with their schoolwork, I wasn't taking time to take an interest in each student personally. And I was dealing with their misbehaviors. I was dealing with their poor grades, but not taking an interest in them as a person. And it doesn't work. You need to have that relationship with them. And again, take an interest in their lives. Ask questions about their interests and their hobbies. And I think it's great that teachers often have a page at the beginning where students can fill out their interests and hobbies and about themselves. That's great. It may not always be totally accurate. The best way to figure out what a student likes is just to listen to them talk, and you can do that at lunchtime. So I would encourage you, when you have lunchtime, for one, make sure it's 15 minutes long, not 5 minutes long, as they would like. Make it 15 minutes long, and eat together as a class so that you can listen to their conversations. You can learn a lot about the students by listening to them in their lunchtime conversations. Now, it's okay sometimes to go eat outside and scatter around sometimes. I wouldn't make it the norm. So ask them about their interests and hobbies, and talk to them. Show interest in their lives. I have a good friend who teaches school, and he takes his students, his boys at least, I'm not sure about the girls, but takes the boys deer hunting with him in the fall. And I think that is just amazing, guys. If you're interested in deer hunting and you can take your students hunting, that is an excellent way to build a relationship. Girls, I'm not sure what y'all like to do, but I guess you can take them on a sewing trip or something. spend time with them outside of the classroom. And if you see them at church, say hi and say their name. And if you see them in town, go talk to them. The third thing in a good relationship, we have love, we have communication, good communication, and the last thing is respect. Make sure you respect the students. Treat them like adults. at least as long as they act like adults. But no, even when they act childish, we still need to treat them like adults. But we deal with the misbehavior. Focus on the behavior that needs to change and not on the student. Treat them as you would want to be treated. And let them, you know, let them give feedback, especially for older grades. Let them give you feedback about things, about how things went, or if something wasn't fair, perhaps. You know, there are times when teachers make poor choices and maybe things aren't perfectly fair, and the student wants to talk to you about something that you did and ask you a question about something you did. Listen to them. Listen to their opinions. That will make them, even if you don't necessarily follow their advice or do what they say, at least you're developing that relationship with them. All right, I'm just going to open it up quickly. If you have any questions or if you have any thoughts about how can we have a good relationship with our students. Everyone's still pretty shy.
Pray for them.
Okay.
I try to make it a habit to every morning when I get to school, I just go around all their desks. I mean, people that are there, obviously. Mm-hmm. And just that, for me, it's really powerful to just be at their desk.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. I should have had that written down, and I didn't. That's very, very important. And you can tell your students that you're praying for them, too. That's a good thing. Any other?
Yeah, second that thing of praying for each one individually. Mm-hmm. I think that's really helpful. The other thing that's might, and so maybe a little hard to do this without being getting on the buddy level, mm-hmm. but be willing to don't make them do something you're not willing to do yourself. Mm-hmm. Like for my students, I'll help them with the cleaning job, mm-hmm. and I feel like that's a great way to help. I'm going to help them clean the bathroom, whatever, help them with clean the bathroom, or maybe help vacuum the hall or whatever, and yeah, I feel like that's really helpful. That's more helpful than just sitting in your desk and catching up or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's value in being with them, even if it's not something that you would technically have to be doing.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Help the students with the jobs, cleaning jobs. Did you?
Yeah, any tips for, I'm teaching 10th graders and I'm not that many years older than them.
Okay. How many?
There's two boys, one girl.
Okay. So how do you... Yes?
Well, for my 10th grader, obviously, well, at least in our school, they do a lot themselves, so I mm-hmm. didn't have a lot of hands-on like class time with mm-hmm. with him. But if you find something that you connect on and can talk about even at lunchtime or something like that, that goes a long ways in just... being an adult in his world that he can look up to, and you can just have conversations about things. I don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't even have to be deep or whatever, mm-hmm. but just connecting on something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is good. Yes?
I think students as a whole think we're a lot older, too, than what we actually are. First year I taught, I was 19, and I was in your position. Mm-hmm. And I had a birthday. I had a birthday party at school, and they thought I was 25. I think they still look up to you.
Yeah.
They respect you for that.
Mm-hmm. One thing you could do, Shane, is grow a beard. That is true. Very true what Lana said. Students will still, even if you're only a couple years older, they will, just because you're the teacher, you appear older to them. And if you can, just keep, walk that line of not being just this buddy-buddy with them, but being the teacher. And you probably won't have to deal with a lot of misbehavior at that level. If you are, then there's probably serious problems going on. But But yeah, listen to them. And very good. Wow, great. Any more comments or questions you might have? I should have said, mentioned something. Sort of reminded me when Landon said something about it. Like, so when you're relating to the students, be very careful in how you say something as well. It's not just in what you say sometimes, it's how you say it. If you say it in a demeaning way, they know if you're saying it in a degrading way versus just saying it in an encouraging way.
Along with that, this is probably different for different groups of people, but you know, a lot of teenagers spend a lot of time ribbing each other. It's okay, as long as it's done in fun, I think. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody knows that. But a teacher cannot be ribbing his students.
Okay.
I mean, maybe if you have already built a relationship with them where you have an appropriate professional distance, mm-hmm. but I just think it breaks it down too much.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that has a lot of truth to it. I never thought about that before, but it makes sense. I mean, you have two adults sometimes that just really give each other a hard time, but there's that relationship. Children are a little more insecure yet and maybe not handle that. Good point. Thank you. Yes.
He made me think about something that happened my first year, and I'm kind of ashamed about it. It wasn't a huge mistake, but there was this kind of a male dominance thing going on at school with the students. You know, it was there when I was in school, and it was within my students that the boys are better than the girls are better than the boys, different things like that. And I took sides a little bit with the boys, and it didn't work out very well. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be really careful to stay neutral mm-hmm. and to not make comments about your girl students that mm-hmm. would demean them at all. Mm-hmm.
Excellent point. Thank you. Well, I'm loving all this feedback here. It's great. Any others? Ladies, y'all been pretty quiet. I think we have some experienced teachers here, maybe. Would you have any, Janela, would you have any thoughts about how you would work on relationship with girls? Ooh, did you see that? You know, girls are really complicated. One thing I will say, especially for guys, if you have lady co-teachers, listen to them. We guys, we can be teaching, and our girl students can have things going on, cliques, and all kinds of complicated things, and we don't even notice it. We don't know what's going on. But our co-teachers, they probably know. They see what's going on, and they can pick up on stuff a lot quicker than we do. So make sure you communicate with your co-teachers about your students, your girl students especially, and hopefully catch some of those things. Very good. I don't want to shut anyone down. If you have anything yet, I'll give you one last chance.
If someone has any tips on how to put it into words, you're not used to being in charge of children, to how to know something in the classroom to suddenly be in charge of a classroom.
Yeah. You're not used to being in charge of a classroom. Suddenly you're in charge and you're supposed to say what happens next. How do you do that? Anyone have any answers?
If you don't ask what's going to happen, the students will.
Okay.
If
you don't say what's going to happen, the students will. Very good.
If you're not feeling confident, at least try to look confident.
Okay, if you're not feeling confident, try to at least look confident.
If they say that you're wavering or unsure, then they'll, then like it was said, they'll take charge or whatever.
Yeah, that's where planning ahead is a huge help. Write things down. Write down what you're going to say when you step up to the your teacher desk for the first time. Write out your procedures and rules. The more you can write out, because the first time stepping in the classroom, it is really, really scary. I still clearly remember my first time standing in front of 12 students, and I'm the one supposed to be in charge. They're looking at me, you know, what's going to happen? So write things down and it'll help. Yes?
So this is not at all to push back on that, because okay. The first time I absolutely did that. But I would say also try to get to a place where you can do things like that without looking at notes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is maybe a little politically charged, but I heard Trump speaking about his way of presenting when he's at a rally, and he was like, he takes no notes with him. He said, I could do that, and I wouldn't make as many mistakes. But he said, you don't have the emotional energy, you don't have the crowd's attention as much if you're always looking down, even a little bit, to glance at your notes.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it, if you just kind of wing it, you have their attention the whole time, and you've got it.
Yeah.
Something interesting to me.
So it's a goal to work for anyway, for sure. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. If you're up there reading off of your notes, that's not going to be very effective either. I don't know. It's like, yeah, you just have to jump in there and it's like sink or swim. You know, you'll get used to it after a while, but it does take time. Yes.
I kind of started singing a song at 11:30 every day. I just found out that that's right in the middle of English period, and the pressure can be kind of high. And it just helps.
Okay, you sing a song, just you or everyone?
Well, I love when I do it. The class, yeah.
Okay.
It takes 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And takes a lot of tension out of there. Good. Okay, well, I'd love to continue for another 30 minutes, but it is time to close. So in closing, remember the takeaway: healthy relationships are built with time and love. It takes work, it takes time, but when you have that relationship with them, you can have a tremendous impact for good on their lives, and you can truly be an effective teacher. God bless you.